Hello and welcome to Techsplaining. This is Brett Lonsdale and I'm with the full crew. We've got Rob Foster, we've got Stephanie and Mark. So Stephanie, ladies first, how are you?
I'm doing all right, hanging in there, staying busy. You know, it's the season of new SOWs and new projects. Everybody's kind of waking back up after the holidays and getting things moving for the year. So that's kind of what I've been doing, SOW machine these days. How are you guys?
Yeah, pretty good this end. So it's been busy, a busy couple of weeks, which I think is pretty much going to be the topic for our show today. So there's been quite a lot of changes that have been going on in the SharePoint world, or the Office 365 world at least, and I think quite a few events going on around the world. So I think it'd be good to talk about that. But before we do, Mark, since Rob's lost his audio,
put me on the spot there. What do you need?
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. But yeah, as Stephanie said, it is the season of SOWs and RFPs. So I've had the joy of responding to numerous RFPs and putting together some demos, which is fun. So I've gotten to play with some new technologies that I haven't played with extensively before. I guess in the past month, I've done things with Power Apps I've never done before, with Power BI, with Azure websites, with some stuff in Lewis. And so I've gotten to get my hands dirty with some new technologies. So it's been cool to see how far things have come since I last looked at it and how easy it is to get started with a lot of the stuff. So yeah, I've been busy.
How many technologies did you say you've touched here in the past month, Mark? It was like five or six.
It was, I think, six different technologies in the past month that I've touched.
Brand new stuff
for me, and they all had a really low barrier of entry. So it's been fun.
I'm disappointed not to hear blockchain, and it's amazing what happens when I unmute my mic.
What did you see? The blockchain got hacked. I just saw someone post an article that the blockchain got hacked.
Did it?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Well, maybe I'm making stuff up, but I'm going to find it because, people on Facebook have opinions about this stuff.
It's always swatted these days.
Yeah, I'm going to say fake news. I don't know.
Yeah, there was an Ignite session on blockchain. It's like a introduction to blockchain kind of thing that I listened to in podcast format the other day. Definitely found it's not, definitely not as effective as a podcast. I was listening to it as I ran. I really need to sit down and go back and watch the video. I think it was showing some things that I really wanted to see, but I thought it was interesting that Ignite even has some of that, those kind of topics, you know, a little bit sidebar from the standard Office 365 stuff, but that's all out on YouTube and through the Ignite site, it's all available. So if you want to learn about it, this is an introduction session to it. So I think Mark, Sinovich, did I say that right? I think he was the one who did that session. But.
Yeah, so there's a website. It's called technologyreview.com. I cannot vouch for it's how worthy, you know, trustworthy it is. But they did a article on February 19th, and it's entitled "Once Hailed as Unhackable, Blockchains Are Now Getting Hacked." So again, I'm not sure of all the content in there. I just saw that there's some conversation going on around Facebook around it. If you guys want to look into it more and give your thoughts, but that's what I'm just remember hearing about that.
Mm. We got nothing.
Yeah. I don't know. Not using it. Don't care.
About the guy that
died a few weeks ago that had like, you know, millions and millions of dollars in bitcoins or in, and they don't have his key, so it's like gone forever.
Mm.
Oh, come on. You know that guy's alive. He's hiding somewhere. He's going to tap into that the second everybody's not paying attention. He's run away somewhere.
It's not a bad retirement plan.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I mean, you could definitely, with that kind of cash, you can probably retire on your own island at that point, I guess.
Well, I think that's what I think he did, right? He just disappeared under strange circumstances in another country. I don't know. Sounds a little fishy to me.
As you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what else is going on? What's up with you, Rob?
Man, I've been busy. I'm tired. I want to go fishing. It's been a long week. So I've been doing a lot of Azure. I've been writing some code, shockingly. I've been doing some stuff with we've talked about the conditional access policy stuff. I've been doing and loading that out for OneDrive. And it was interesting, just the power of Azure. I mean, I get to where I take it for granted sometimes, but like Friday, I was running these web. I developed some web jobs that do processing across all 8 of our SharePoint multi-geo instances, right? So what I did was I deployed that, found out, hey, it's not running as fast as I'd like it to do. And so what I did was I deployed one web job to do all my geos. And then I was like, okay, well, this is going to take a while. So let's go ahead and deploy all these web jobs to every region where my SharePoint geo is, and then process each geo in the same data center, right? So I was able to redeploy all of this stuff into the new geos and deploy the code and kick off the jobs in less than an hour, right? And I think about, like, that was just a no-brainer, very easy to do. And I think about, 15 years ago, how long that would have taken to build out my own data centers and order servers and, find places to actually host this stuff. I mean, it's just remarkable how amazing this technology is. And I take it for granted. And I just sit and think, I was thinking about it this weekend, like, wow, that is really amazing that you can do that.
And to echo that, some of the stuff I played with in the past few weeks has been things in Azure. I set up the new free Azure websites. I set one of those up and in literally minutes, and it's just like insanely easy to do. And then I embedded that as an application in Teams and gave it the Teams script, so that it now had like some Teams functionality built in. I mean, it just, like I said, took literally minutes to do. I also played with Logic Apps for the first time. I know those have been out there for a while, but it was shockingly easy to go in there, create a Logic App to do some things I needed to do. So it's every time I go into Azure to do something, especially when it's something new and I'm like, well, crap, how do I get started? I've been amazed at how easy it actually is to get started.
Yeah. And things like what I like about it, too, is the way they're actually introducing automation. So the way you want to build in automation for deploying your infrastructure, for example, you can go ahead and set that up in all of your web apps or databases or whatever, set that up in a resource group, and there's an automation tab that you can actually create. It will generate the templates for what you've got created. And then you can load that into Visual Studio and have Azure DevOps actually deploy that across your environments for you, so that you get guaranteed consistency across. And you don't have to write code for that. You just click a button, download the automation script, and then from there it's all parameter based. So you just set some parameters, you name your web apps whatever they need to be named, or your resources whatever they need to be named in the new environment, and it just runs. I mean, it's phenomenal. That is just so. I just think it's probably looked over a lot, but I just think it's just remarkable and groundbreaking. I mean, it's just, I'm just so excited about that, because it reduces the risk of point and click, and you've got a bunch of things in a resource group you've got to deploy across multiple environments. You can guarantee the consistency of that stuff across the environments. It's awesome.
It is. The other thing I did for the first time is, as a developer, one of the things we hate most of all when we're creating new applications is especially web applications, is getting all the authentication bits to work properly. I also created my first Azure web app. I don't know if you've created one of those lately, but when you create an Azure web app, it specifies what do you want your authentication method to be. You can choose right there. Do you want to authenticate against Azure AD, against Facebook, or whatever? And the minute you click the checkbox and then try to go to the website, it prompts you to authenticate, and it's automatically connected to the authentication provider you selected. Mm-hmm. And it just works. And I'm just like, I didn't have to do anything to get that. It just works. I can start just writing code. I don't have to worry about that garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's stuff like that they've done. I think that makes the operational efficiencies of this doing this stuff. I mean, it's just a no-brainer why you would want to do it in the cloud versus hosting it on premises. I mean, just things like exactly what you just talked about. I mean, wiring a web app to authenticate against Azure AD on premises has way more steps than it does than the checkbox you just described, right? Yeah. So I think that's it's just so advantageous to do that. I mean, I'm really blown away with this technology, and I think I haven't played with AWS as much, but I think they're similar in the way that you can configure them and stuff. I like the way Azure has done their costing model for things like Azure Functions, right? You can choose for, you know, do you want to do on a consumption model, or do you want to do it to where they're just always on and you're just paying a consistent fee? And I think they've done a really good job of making that configurable to where you don't blow your budget. You can really control how you spend your money on the resources you consume.
So I was just about to ask you about that. Actually, you mentioned pricing. Things like Logic Apps, you've been playing around with those. How does that scale to enterprise org? Because when you're paying per execution or something, compared with things like Flow, where you get so many executions included, how do you even begin to think about which model you should use, or does that even come into the equation? I mean, are you just looking at what the Logic Apps can do for you versus Flow, or is there a good discussion around how many executions are we likely to have, and how do we control that, and how much is this going to cost this business with hundreds of thousands of users?
So the reason I looked at Logic Apps in the first place was because of the change in Flow licensing to where if you wanted to do an HTTP connector, you had to have premium licensing. Mm-hmm. Well, in Logic Apps, you can set up the exact same type of connection. And it's the way you do it is identical to Flow. The interface even looks like Flow. So I set up the same functionality that I had done before in Flow as a Logic App. It's a very simple Logic App. It only had two actions in it. But I looked at the pricing for Logic Apps, and for a two-action Logic App, if I did the math correctly, I'm not swearing that I did, but if I did it correctly, to run that Logic App 10,000 times would cost 17 and a half cents.
Yeah, there's a lot of leading zeros in front of this.
Well, I mean, yes, you have to. Let me talk about it at scale, all right? And so you have to consider the costing model of Azure before you deploy anything. I mean, I'm talking web apps or anything. And I'll give you an example. We had a team that they were deploying something. I forgot what it was. And it wasn't like a POC, but they were like, hey, let's deploy this to dev. Let's see if it's going to work. And what happened was they just left it on. And when the bill came in for that month, they got like a $350,000 bill for that month for leaving that on, right? Yikes. So that's a big cost model. So at scale, you have to do it. And on my recent, I guess, endeavor, one of the things that I've got a set of Azure Functions that do the same thing as my web jobs. Now, my web jobs are something that have to run, you know, every 5 minutes or as much as I can run them over and over and over and over again. Now, what I've done is I've got some of the same logic replicated in Azure Functions so that we can do automation over the top of our service desk or whatever, right? So say, hey, let's say providing external access to Teams. Somebody can go into our service desk, they can request access, and then they can select their team. From there, it does a lookup, so show me all my teams. And then when that approval happens, it calls out to an Azure function that actually grants that access. Now, there's a cost to that, right? It's very minimal, but when it calls out there, it's going to charge you. Now, because we've got it on a per, I guess, call or consumption basis. Now, for my web apps or for my web jobs, I've done something very similar. So I replicated actually those capabilities and essentially copied and pasted the code into a web job that runs not for free, but you don't get charged every time it runs because you're calling a function, right? So I factored costing, even though costing would be very minimal, right? But I did factor costing into the design for how my web jobs run and the code behind them. So costing, you have to consider not only from how many times it runs, but you also have to consider it in the design for whatever you're implementing. Right, it goes all across the board. It becomes part of the architecture, the costing model. It has to. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of cost, I'm going to pitch a tool that's out there that you guys, I don't know if you guys are using it or not, but ShareGate actually came out with a tool called Overcast last year. And Overcast allows you to track your Azure spend. It also gives you your estimated annual costs, and it gives you some ways of ideas for saving money in Azure. So that's something, if you're concerned about costs, it's overcast.sharegate.com. And apparently, unless their licensing model has changed, if your Azure spend is less than $50,000 a year, Overcast is free.
Now, is that for $50,000 a year for your subscription or for your overall Azure spend?
I don't know. That's something to check into. I'm not sure about that.
Not a licensing guy, right?
Yeah.
I'm way under 50,000 for my subscription that I'm doing right now, but across all of my Azure projects, I'm not, you know, so I think from an enterprise perspective, I might have to pay, but I can see where that tool would be extremely valuable to basically everybody, even if you had to buy the license, because forecasting this stuff gets really, really complicated because you have to look at peaks and, you know, and especially if you're doing the auto scale model, right, to where as traffic comes in, your application plan will scale up to where it will support peaks and valleys and things like that. It gets really, really hard to predict at that point.
Yeah. And it shows it's got some nice graphs to show you everything that you've been doing. I was actually trying to pull it up here while we were talking. And unfortunately, I'd actually gone into Azure and shut down all my services, so I would stop spending my credits. So I have nothing to report on in Overcast. But if it's something that you guys are concerned about and you want to check it out, overcast.sharegate.com. I'll expect that royalty check any day now, ShareGate.
Yeah, which Ben is going to get the order.
Yeah.
Isn't that three Bens then?
Yeah. Yeah. So you sure about the new icons?
Yeah. No, the new icons, apparently that's a thing that I heard from you. I haven't seen any blog post about it, though. I'm being serious about that.
Maybe we just, you know, go around different circles. You need to work on your trolling.
I do.
So I've seen so many blog posts in the past few weeks about the new icons for Office, and I'm just like, it's icons. They don't need that many blog posts.
But didn't they announce this at Ignite? I just don't understand what the big hubbub is. I mean, they talked about this in the freaking keynote at Ignite.
I would say so, but this is I don't know who's listening. So
I've never heard in the history of my time in the Microsoft industry for there to be, such
passion
content out there about the passion about the icons. I mean,
the only person who should have any input about Office icons and their change should be Tracy. What's Tracy's last name? Tracy Vandersheef. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's actually going to be speaking in Branson in a couple weeks, but she has Office logos tattooed on her arm. And when they changed when they changed the logo for SharePoint, they reached out to her about it. So I think if only person in the world that has the right to actually blog about that, that's Tracy. So everybody else, quit making all that noise.
Well, yeah, the SharePoint one's gone from blue to green. Maybe they can just add a little bit of yellow to it.
Oh, it's teal.
Oh, teal.
Yeah.
Teal.
I like them. I mean, I like the icons. I think they look good. I mean, I think it's a good progression. It doesn't add any value whatsoever to the product or the platform, but I like the marketing aspect. I think they've done a great job.
I think it's fine to change the icons and update them. I just don't need to hear about it from 1,000 people.
I think it was only like 999.
Okay, sorry.
You need to let it go.
I've got to get on Facebook more because I missed this whole thing other than seeing it pop up on your news feed, on your post, Mark.
Yeah, I've seen it like on LinkedIn and Twitter a lot. And then people started like, I complained about it on Facebook because, yes, apparently sometimes I like to complain about things. And ever since then, whenever somebody else would find another blog article, they would send it to me.
I think that's fantastic.
I don't.
It's well deserved, Mark. You're going to rant. People are going
to
send you things.
I know. I wish they would go back to send me bacon. That is so much better.
Speaking of people sending us things, we do have another listener question that came in this week, right, Mark? You were saying we got a question in from someone that wanted us to cover something specific.
Well, you know, I got to look up the person's name if I want to give him proper credit. And I'll let you guys talk about it while I say what he asked. He apparently listened to one of our previous shows where we talked about the changes to Flow licensing and the and what that means for the HTTP connectors. And he couldn't find information that verified what we said on the podcast. So since you threw me under the bus about the email, I'm going to throw you under the bus about where he can find information about that while I look up what his name was.
Check out the show notes. Bound to be there.
Yeah, we'll definitely have a link there. So the article referenced is out on the tech community site. So let me see if I can find the exact spot out there, but it's under updates to Microsoft Flow and Power Apps for Office 365, which really narrows it down. That's the title of the blog. But it was released, let me see here, November of 2018, so specifically on the 27th. So if that helps you narrow that down, it's from Chris. But if you go out to the tech community, there's a ton of good blogs out there. But the gist of it, if you aren't up to speed, is that we did have a change in the licensing structure of Microsoft Flow and Power Apps, and specifically effective February 1st of this year, 2019, the following capabilities will only be available with Power Apps Flow Plan 1 and Plan 2, meaning if you have the Flow and Power Apps included with your Office 365 subscription, you will no longer have that functionality available. So what that means is this HTTP connector or the HTTP custom actions that allows you to integrate Flow outside of SharePoint and OneDrive and also connect to things within SharePoint, that functionality is no longer going to be available to you. So kind of the big hubbub there is that we've got folks that have already used it. So one example is that we have a customer we created a workflow for within Microsoft Flow, and that flow just called another flow. And we use the HTTP custom action to get that done, to kind of break down the flows, make it a little easier to follow, and that is now no longer included with that license within 365 without upgrading to P1.
Active users are good until end of January 2020, right?
That's correct. So in our case, what we found out was that you do have a year to kind of figure out what to do here. So good news, if you were already using that kind of functionality, you're already using that HTTP custom action, you have a year to figure out how to transition that, because you are grandfathered in and you do not have to immediately upgrade to that P1.
Hey, let me ask this. So let's just say you have, you are in an organization to where you have maybe a bunch of flows written that you may or may not have written. You know, say there's 1,000 flows running in your org. Can you report? Can you run a report on the flows that have been created to determine which ones of those are using this particular connector?
Yeah, I believe there is PowerShell that you can run. I don't know that there's anything in the out of the box reporting that will tell you, but I'm relatively sure someone told me. I haven't done it myself, so I'll give it that caveat. Relatively sure someone told me you can run some commands in PowerShell to get that information back and find out if you are in fact using it.
Yeah, because that's something I think would be critical if you've got like an organization like mine where you could have tens of thousands potentially of flows that are deployed and running. How do you know which ones are impacted and who owns them? Who created them? How do you even contact those people? Right.
You'll find out at the end of January 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it becomes my problem. Nope. Right.
And that email came from Thomas, by the way. So thank you, Thomas, for that email.
Thomas who?
There is no last name on the email. So.
Oh, well, thanks, Thomas. Thomas.
Yeah, so
I'm sure there must be hundreds of Thomases that listen to our show.
There's dozens.
Tens of Thomases. Hey, so you know, one of the things that I hear more, or I'm hearing more and more from, I guess, traditional SharePoint people, and it seems to be on all fronts, you know, whether you're a UX person or you're an admin or whatever. It's like, so I talk to people and I'm like, hey, so what are you doing with SharePoint today? I mean, how are you using it as we've moved into the online world and all of that? How has your role changed? And more often than not, I hear basically the same thing. And it's, well, I pretty much just write flows now. You know, is that a thing? I mean, is that like where we as technology professionals are going, is that we're essentially going to be flow managers at this point? I mean, is it really that big?
So I want to sort of twist this question a little bit as well. And that everybody that I speak to, yeah, they're not just being flow managers, but they're using Teams or building Power Apps and so on. And even when you look at conferences and sessions that people are submitting, it's all around those technologies, not so much SharePoint. And there's quite a few comments about who's using SharePoint nowadays, and is everybody just moving away from SharePoint or just using it for through Teams and what have you. But there's some really compelling changes that are actually taking on or taking place in SharePoint as well. And surely Microsoft isn't doing that for no reason. I saw this week at the Ignite tour in London, the changes that have been made to a document library, for instance. And there's some really, really cool changes there. Granted, things that should have been changed years ago, in my opinion, but they have eventually taken place. So, yeah, who is still using SharePoint, and does it still have a place in the world?
I guess we'll know after the SharePoint conference, and we'll see the attendance there, right? I mean, if attendance is huge, I would say, yeah, there's still a lot of people using that specific technology. I remember SharePoint conference used to be one of the largest technology conferences Microsoft had. It was up there in competition with an Ignite or, something like that. But I don't know after the last one, I don't know how true that is anymore.
Well, but they didn't run that conference, and it's not pushed purely by Microsoft.
Right. So we'll know in a few weeks.
But to be fair, we didn't have Ignite before when we had SharePoint conference before. So you didn't have to choose between Ignite and SharePoint. Now you have to choose.
There was TechEd.
Some companies.
Yeah, there was TechEd, dude. Yeah.
Well, TechEd was not SharePoint, though.
It was Ignite.
Oh, my God. Oh, okay. So TechEd was not SharePoint. Ignite.
It was Ignite.
SharePoint.
You know, though, you used to be able to do SharePoint in a silo, though. You could support and build the technology within just being just a SharePoint admin. Now we have these big debates going on, and we're actually having this conversation with a customer on Monday. They want to know from Microsoft, what is your best practice on who should have global admin access? Because we've got a lot of, turf wars and ouchy feelings over, well, I'm a SharePoint admin, but I can't manage Teams, but I'm a collaboration person, and where do I belong? And I think we're having the same identity crisis just from you look at the conferences. Well, what does SharePoint conference cover? It's not just SharePoint anymore. So now you've got this blend of like, well, I can go to Ignite and get all that stuff, or I can go to SharePoint conference and get that stuff. And what's my role? And we're still trying to sort all of that out. Who goes where? What rights do they have? What am I responsible for? Like, it's kind of messy.
Well, we've seen that in the community.
Here's how I see it. There used to be a massive conference called the Microsoft Exchange Conference, MEC. That conference no longer exists. And I would say there are far more, I don't want to say users, but there's probably far more interest. Maybe not. No, I'm not even going to say that. It was a huge conference. It was bigger than SharePoint conference. But
nothing was bigger than SharePoint conference. You take that back.
Well, they didn't have as good of bands, I'm sure. Okay. I mean, they didn't have Bon Jovi singing cover songs, whatever. So that conference is actually folded into Ignite. And what I'm worried about with the SharePoint conference is that SharePoint is far bigger than just SharePoint anymore. And if you don't fold it into a bigger and more enveloping conference, I think you really isolate a lot of people that can actually attend something like a SharePoint conference, because they need to attend something like Ignite to where they can get that full breadth of content that they're actually using in the real world, because SharePoint just isn't SharePoint anymore. That boat has sailed.
Well, okay, but I think you need to look at it from the bigger picture to understand what's going on with the SharePoint conference. When Jeff Teper came back, took the helm, and reinvigorated SharePoint, they put on an event called they put on a Future of SharePoint event. This wasn't a big conference. It was a fairly intimate event that they put on, where at the beginning of the year, in the first half of the year, they talked about all the new things that were coming for SharePoint and what they were going to show off or have, you know, give some previews of what was coming for Ignite. So you could go to Ignite and see a lot of that stuff rolled out. So it's kind of like generating the excitement for what we're doing and then showing at Ignite. And so they did those future SharePoint events for 2 years in a row. Then after that, they decided, well, let's see what we can do to get SharePoint conference going again and turn the SharePoint conference into that future of SharePoint event. So the SharePoint conference is not only the SharePoint conference, it's also their future of SharePoint, where they announce a lot of new fancy things coming, some really cool stuff that maybe you'll get to see at Ignite. So that's the story there. So they're two different conferences. I did think it makes it hard for deciding which one are you going to go to, because they're both fairly pricey. So,
I see where you're going with this one.
I did not mention that my conference is going on in 2 weeks and that registration is only $150.
No, but here's where I see your point, but here's where I have an issue with it. If you're going to a conference for the keynote announcements, you're going for the wrong reasons, right? You have to have, I don't think there's, I mean, and I know Bill Baer is going to shoot me in the face when he sees me for saying this. I just don't think there's a good value for me sending myself or any of the people I work with to a conference like the SharePoint conference. I would much rather send them to Ignite, to where they get that breadth of knowledge. I mean, if you're going for the keynote announcements or whatever marketing spin they're going to put on that, then you can read that within hours of that actually happening in real time.
So here's where I'm starting to wonder if SharePoint could differentiate itself, because Ignite is a lot of tech. It's a lot of different areas, right? It's Exchange, it's Teams, it's SharePoint, whatever. Could SharePoint differentiate itself? And maybe we've talked about this, but I don't know. Does it become a collaboration conference? Could you attract people that aren't managing the infrastructure side of things and give them a business user, power user, collaboration conference and have value there that you aren't necessarily going to pick out as easily from Ignite, which tends to be pretty tech heavy overall. I still think there could be a place for that, because now I can't tell you how many people in my deployment planning sessions now, I think we talked about this last time, how many of them are very business user focused, power users. They don't have a technical background and they've been tasked with rolling out Teams and SharePoint. Could we have a conference for those people so that they can be successful on their side of the house too? And I think there could, that could be really valuable, but it would have to be branded as such. And I don't think there's that strong of a distinction right now.
Yes, I think there's absolutely a market for a collaboration type conference. There's a market for it and there's a gap, because there's nothing that exists like that today. Well, yeah, I mean, formerly by Microsoft, right? So I mean, there's really nothing that exists like that today, because, I mean, there's not going to be any business users, I don't believe, that are going to go to SharePoint conference. I mean, it's just not marketed that way. They might have sessions for it, but they're not going to be enough to justify, you know, $5,000 investment into a trip to Vegas or whatever it costs, you know. I'm assuming that would be a high end, but on the other side, you know, Microsoft does have They have Ignite. They also have Envision and Inspire, right? Which are targeted for that business level type people, right? So there are conferences for that. I don't know how much it involves in collaboration. I think it's Envision is more strategy. Inspire, I think, might be the one that's targeted at more business users.
Well, that was really the partner conference, wasn't it?
Was it Inspire? Was Inspire the partner one? But yeah, if there was something that would bring in things like SharePoint and OneDrive and Teams and...
I got it. I got Microsoft Enrage. That would be perfect.
Yeah. But there's and I don't think SharePoint Conference is that right now. I don't think it's... I might be wrong. Somebody please prove me wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I just don't think that's what it is today.
Well, it's not just SharePoint content, too, if you look at the sessions out there. So, yeah, we're calling it the SharePoint conference, but it's not just SharePoint. It does go across.
And therein lies the confusion, I think. And that confusion is not just at the conference level, but we're seeing it here in the UK. I don't know if it's the same in the States, at user group level as well. So, you know, the SharePoint user group meetings are not necessarily SharePoint anymore. They are Power Apps and Teams and Flow and so on. But then there's Power Apps user group starting, and there's Flow user group starting, and it's becoming a bit of a turf war.
I think about trying to sell this to my leadership to say, hey, I'd like to go to this conference. It's the SharePoint conference, and they're going to immediately say, well, you don't just do SharePoint. Can we get a little more value in our investment for sending you into this training so that you get more than just SharePoint? Yeah. Because SharePoint is this much of my role. it's not much of what I do. And even though there are more than just SharePoint sessions at the SharePoint conference, it's hard for me to sell the concept of a SharePoint conference to somebody that's paying the bills. That's my opinion. I shared that with the conference team at Ignite, with the SharePoint conference team. I think they received my feedback. I don't know that they heard my feedback. So, but yeah, that's.
Did they value your feedback?
Well, they're still called the SharePoint conference.
Oh, Collab Summit was already taken, right, Mark?
Well, yeah, exactly.
See, whoever thinks about this, that's a great, I mean, what you're doing in Branson, Mark, is exactly what we need on a large scale. I mean, I think Branson is a great conference, but I think about that. That could be a 15,000-20,000 seat conference.
It will be as soon as he moves it out of Branson.
Yeah.
I hear that all the time. I hear it all the time. I hear you. I take that's great feedback. But I used to be a SharePoint Saturday at Ozarks, right? There was just SharePoint, but now it's a multi-day event, and I've got tracks for Azure. I've got tracks for Office 365, Power Apps, Flow, Teams, SharePoint, all of it, right? So it's about all that stuff now.
I mean, there's a good question there: is when is SharePoint Saturday going to evolve from just being SharePoint Saturday? Or is that going to go in the same way as the user groups, where there's going to be somebody's going to fire up a Power App Saturday or something?
Well, but there's something to be said for name recognition. And if you want to get really technical about it, SharePoint really is a glue that kind of ties all these things together.
Yeah.
So by talking about Power Apps and Flow and all these, and especially Teams and all these other things at a SharePoint conference makes sense, because it's you're going to use it, you're going to touch it, it's going to be involved somewhere.
True. Mm-hmm.
So you call it SharePoint Plus.
Or Office 365 conference.
No. But what about the on-prem SharePoint people who aren't using it?
I think that message is fairly clear.
Well, that's the other thing. There are still a lot of on-prem people. That is a solid user base. And
there is, you're right.
And they don't care at all about Office 365.
From our point of view, for years when I was looking at our own metrics as an ISV, we were still looking at a large scale 2013 deployment across all of our customer bases. But in the last 12 months, that's really dropped from previous years. There has actually been a lot of people who have moved to 2016, but the majority of them have gone to online.
And, we see mostly online too, but then we go out and do a conference in DC. Forget about it. It's all on-prem. It's crazy the amount of on-prem in DC.
Yeah, federal's a different ball game.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know really how to conclude this topic, but
I think just one way of wrapping it up as well, we did mention the Ignite the tour. It's fairly topical because I was there this week, so it was pretty interesting to go to. And I don't know if anybody's been on the Ignite website, but if you can't get out to Ignite this year, then they are going around a lot of cities across Europe and Asia and India and places, and also across all parts of the States and Canada. Yeah, so it's a good little 2-day event.
And if you do want to go to the SharePoint conference in Vegas, it's coming up in May. You will see a bunch of people there, a bunch of SharePoint people. So I think if you're a SharePoint fan, definitely check it out. And I'm going to plug my session. I'm going to be doing a session there, and you can actually get a discount on registration if you use my last name of Rackley when you register. So for what that's worth, but yeah, I'll be there. It's going to be fun. They do a great show. So check it out. Or if Rob can get this show pushed out soon, like in the next few days, you still have time to come to my event in Branson, Missouri. So again, it's the North American Collaboration Summit. And I will special discount code for people who listen to this podcast, use Textplaining. Because it's so late, I'll get people free registration to use the discount code Textplaining. So how's that? Collabsummit.org to do that.
Mm. Wow. That's awesome. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
So we are, I guess we're all going to meet up at Summit here in the next couple of weeks. Is that correct?
That is true. Right after the North American Collaboration Summit in Branson, Missouri, that you can go to for free using the discount code Textplaining, we will be at the MVP Summit. Sorry, you can hit me when we're there, okay?
That's great. That was great. It's great. Yeah, yeah. Now, I hope we can do some shows there as well, and maybe get on some more guests like we did at Ignite. It's always fun to catch up with people at the summit, and I think I'll actually stay in a real hotel with other MVPs this time, so it's going to be good.
We talked you into it, didn't we?
You're the Hyatt this time. You shamed me into coming to the Hyatt. I think me and Brett are rooming together. So
are we? I don't know whether we. I know we tried to do that, but I didn't get it. So I don't know what the outcome of that one was. I need to look.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I might be in a single room paying. Because the instruction. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm sure the listeners don't care.
Sidebar on that later. We'll give you some tips.
Yeah, right. I might be with somebody else. That'll be fun. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I'd say let's wrap up the show. I mean, I think we've covered quite an extensive list of topics here today, which all will be wrapped up nicely and placed in the show notes package and everything. So,
of course.
if you have any questions or comments or feedback, please send us an email at info@textplaining.net. And other than that, we still enjoy doing the show. So we hope to hear from you soon, and we will come at you with another show here again real soon.
And any comments on icons, if you can send them to what's your email address, Mark?
Yeah, I'll give you my email address.
In the show notes.
In the show notes, yes.
All right, well, thanks a lot, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Cheers.